Welcome to the Atypical Metal Dad Podcast. Today we're going to tell you a little story, and again, I don't know why I keep saying we. It's just me. It's just me, a little can of butter. Maybe it is we. Maybe it's me and Herb. Herb is probably what, number one, it's what prompts me to laugh at my own jokes most of the time. But it's, you know, it's probably also what gets me to open up a little bit and talk and want to do something like this. So maybe that or it's just, my split personality speaking and joining us. So even though there's one of me physically, mentally, there's probably about 30 of me. But anyway, you have to excuse me. I have a terrible memory. I don't have a cough button. I have an Android phone and a headset. So I apologize. I had to step away from the microphone that I was trying to make work, because I know a couple of the earlier episodes had really, really poor audio quality, or I should say sound quality. It was just very low. I thought the clarity of it was pretty good, but you just had to crank it up so much. So I'm just back to some basic equipment. And it's not, I don't need a big production for my chit-chats that I'm having out in my office. So anyway, I thought I would kind of take you on a journey, and my memory, my memory doesn't serve me if I kind of touched on this. But recently I've been re-given, I guess would be a word I'll make up for it, several hundred, probably maybe even 400 or 500, I don't know, of CDs from, really from the time that I was like 18 on until I stopped buying CDs, which was probably about six, seven years ago. In that 6-7 years, that's when I switched over to buying vinyl, and very rarely do I ever buy a CD. More than anything, I might buy something on Bandcamp if there's no vinyl available, and I just want something physical and want to support the band. And more often than not, those just kind of end up on the shelf, and I keep the digital content that comes with the Bandcamp download. So anyway, I made that shift, and I made that shift because I was going through a divorce, and I kind of needed a new hobby. So, going through divorce is tough. It doesn't really matter. Even if you know deep down, it's kind of for the best. You care about someone, you love someone, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're the best fit in that person's life any longer. You meet someone when you're in your early 20s, and you both go through some drastic changes. I certainly did. I certainly wasn't mature enough to handle all that I was responsible for at that age. And that reflects, but honestly, you just change as a person. What you want changes, what the person that you're with wants changes. And sometimes you just change in different directions and you don't even realize it. And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, why are we even doing this? It certainly wasn't an easy time. And in spite of, a little bit of feelings deep down that, yeah, maybe this was for the best, and I'll be 100% honest with you, a little bit of excitement, because I know that I certainly wasn't getting what I needed, you still feel a sense of loss, because you do care about that person, and you have for quite some time. You have a child with that person, in this case. So in spite of maybe having a little bit of hope deep in the back of your mind, you maybe have to have that to try to get through all of the hurt and what you're feeling. And it's something that you don't know how to deal with, because if you're fortunate, you've never dealt with it before. And if you're really fortunate, you'll never deal with it again. One of the things that we tried to do, I kind of worked for a couple of months to see if we can make it work. It became evident that that wasn't in the cards. On her side, I think she was just done, and was trying to be sensitive and not necessarily come right out and say it. But I think once I got the gist that it was done, I was like, all right, well, now it's time to deal with the business end of it. But we had kind of talked really early on about having to try to maintain, a peace between the two of us, especially, for the child that we had together, but also the stepson that we had essentially raised from the time he was my stepson and her child. I had essentially raised him from the time that I was he was two. If I had raised him from the time that I was two, I probably would have done an even worse job than I did, trying to navigate through all that. But anyway, I raised him and did a pretty good job of filling the father role. Though there's probably a lot of things I would have changed about, how we interacted with each other. But hindsight always looks really nice when you get a chance to go backwards. We wanted to make sure that we didn't turn into one of those people that just couldn't, because we saw them. We saw some of those families families at the hockey rink where, you know, the kid was just kind of a mess and really a punk. And you're like, oh man, why is that kid? And then you see the parents, they can't even have a conversation at the hockey rink. And so we just didn't want to do that. So even early on when it was difficult, we would, like, you know, I would still go up and stand next to her, you know, at the hockey game. So when our son looked up, who was playing goalie, he would see that we were, you know, still on the same side, and that side was his, in spite of all that we were going through. And it was really hard for him. I think he was about 12, maybe 11 or 10, 11 or 12 at the time. I don't have the exact dates off the top of my head, but really, you know, a tough age. And he was pretty close to both of us. So we just decided that we had to do a really good job of helping him through this transition. And, you know, he admitted later on that he had a really, really tough year dealing with it. But, you know, it really did help that we were all kind of seemingly, you know, happy to be around each other in spite of all the chaos. So anyway, that's a little bit of a backstory. And it's a story of redemption and a story of happiness. And it ends well because, I mean, look, it's 6 years later, obviously. You know, a lot of stuff just gets subsided. The sharpness of the feelings gets dulled, and you just kind of settle in, and everybody moves on. I've remarried. I have a pair of toddlers, twin boys, with my wife. She's moved on and has been with the same guy really since. I think this is probably one of the, you know, the first person that she may have at least seriously dated after we had broken up. So we've all kind of moved on. We've settled into our own lives. And when we see each other, it's very, very casual and comfortable. She has a wonderful family. I mean, her brother has been my best friend since her and I met. We spend a lot of time hanging together. So, and then, you know, all of her cousins, they were all just, and that's part of it too, right? You know, it's like, all right, you know, you can deal with, all right, I lost my wife. You know, that's not in the cards anymore. It's like, but shit, I mean, I didn't have much of a family of my own. So it's like, I got to lose all of those people too. And, you know, a lot of them, you just do, you see them quite, you know, you see them from time to time, and you're very happy to do so. But realistically, you know, you're not going to be in touch with them as much as you are. Aside from my best friend, who is still, you know, my ex brother-in-law. You know, he stayed pretty neutral through the whole thing, and she knew how close we were. And since her and I weren't at each other's throats, what problem would it be for him to stay involved? So I'm actually meeting him, for dinner. We hadn't really had a chance to get together for either of our birthdays, because of the pandemic. So we're going to meet up for dinner a little bit later this evening. So, you know, you're going through all of that. But, you know, again, you try to stay friends. So, she was having a yard sale. And, you know, there was a bunch of stuff that was in storage. You know, part of what I did was, like, I was like, look, I don't want any of this shit. You know what I mean? I was just done. We had to sell the house. We had to short sell the house because we had done some renovations to it, significant renovations for our growing family. And then at the time we were going through the divorce, the market was still pretty low. It was getting back up, but not to the point. So we were a little bit top heavy on it. So I was like, look, I said, I'm going to, like, pack up what I need. And, you know, you do whatever you want with everything else. If there's anything you want, and then we could just leave the rest. We could have pickers come in. If there's a lot of stuff that we don't want, or you don't want, and I said, or you can sell it. You can do whatever you want. I just don't want to be involved, nor do I want any of any money if you raise it from that. But really what I did was I was just like, you know, like a cartoon, just like running through and leaving my imprint out the wall. I was just done. I didn't want any of the memories in the house. I really just wanted a fresh start. She had a better head about it than I did. So she did. I mean, she packed up most of it, put it into storage. Your family had a pretty good size property with some spare storage on it. So she had kept, you know, she had gotten rid of a lot of stuff that was unnecessary, but kept a lot of stuff. So she was going to have a yard sale. This is now 6 years later. And she opened up a bunch of boxes, and they were all my, you know, old CDs. And I mean, like, when she, it wasn't just old CDs, like, hey, here's some old Korn CDs. It was old demos, from when I used to run a little online store, like, you know, Japanese hardcore stuff that's long out of print. But more importantly than that, there's, like, all of my friends' bands that were in, all of the local bands that we had, you know, spent, you know, years going to see locally in countless shows, you know, in the Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts area, and even a little bit further out from time to time. So it was all there. And, you know, had we not had the relationship that we had, it probably would have been easier for her to say, oh, fuck it, you know, just put them out there. And someone, if anybody stepped in there that had any knowledge of music, they would have had a field day. Because there's some valuable stuff in here. You know, I've got, you know, really old, like, deathcore demos. Someone was really excited to find, I had posted Misericordium, which is one of the early, you know, deathcore slam bands out there. So there's a combination of some really, well, there's not a combination of things. There's a lot of valuable content in there. It's just valuable for a combination of different reasons, right? There are some stuff that has sentimental value, like my friend Anthony's bands, who I found that CD and popped it in and just can't believe how good it was and how good it is and how well it holds up. And, you know, so those are the ones that have value for sentimental reason. There's no monetary value there. It's all like, holy shit, these are all memories. And then the other reason is some of them, like, you know, old Misery Signals, like, you know, release on now defunct labels, there's some value there. And that's the stuff that I might, you know, slowly over time, you know, find a fan, try to give them a little bit of a bargain and make some money for myself and to support my other hobbies. But really what has happened is, you know, are really trying to keep a positive relationship through a difficult time allowed me this experience that I'm going through now. And my current wife is like, you are really into this. And I've tried to explain to her how much this stuff means to me. And I think she gets it and she appreciates it, but she, you know, she didn't know me at the time. Nobody really did, except for the friends that probably are as excited to see some of these pictures as I am. So, you know, she's just kind of watching me like get giddy over this. And I'm just coming out into my office at night, sorting through CDs and finally put together all of the local stuff. You know, these are all the bands that were just, you know, somewhat local. Some of them maybe made it and branched out a little bit, but I've got a really good collection and I'm just enjoying going through them. So, you know, listening to a band from, I believe they're from Brockton, Massachusetts. I always say Taunton, but I think they were from Brockton, called Eastside. And this was like, you know, back in the late 90s and, you know, nu metal was all over the radio and you'd hear shit like Linkin Park and pop. Linkin Park was good, actually. Excuse me. I didn't actually mean to mention them. I meant to say Limp Bizkit and Papa Roach, you know, these places, these bands that combined, you know, what was nu metal with a hip hop influence. And it was never really very good, though. I can't say that some of the stuff didn't occasionally catch your ear. I'd be insincere if I said that, but it wasn't, you knew it wasn't very good. It was fun. You know, they were catchy songs, but there was no staying power. And, you know, I come back and I hadn't listened to this Eastside shit in probably 15 years. And you're like, you know, I immediately got mad thinking, you know, why weren't these songs on the radio? Because they were heavy. Like they were actually really metal songs with some legitimate, you know, hardcore and hip hop influence. And, you know, Eastside started to make it a little bit. I remember seeing them on Farm Club. And I don't know if they ever got signed to a small label or whatnot, but then they just kind of, you know, they kind of disappeared and I just kind of lost touch. Cause that's when as I got older, I had started my family. So I kind of stepped away from all of this stuff for a little while. So, you know, I'm really enjoying the experience of going through all of these memories. But again, it's, you know, a lot of positive can come out of negative situations and it's really tough to see it at the time. But how you handle things does impact, you know, your potential for future happiness. I mean, you wouldn't know. I wouldn't know if I had missed this opportunity, but I would imagine at some point I would be like, man, where the fuck are those CDs? And they'd be gone. You know, someone would have, if someone was smart, they would have found them and made themselves a, you know, a handsome amount of money selling those things on Discogs and potentially keeping them, some for themselves if they were fans. But, you know, I've got like my original. And again, these are the ones that have no monetary value because they were probably mass produced. But, you know, the first Madball CD, you know, that I had set it off, you know, the original pressing, which was the one that got me started into hardcore to begin with. So I got the original vinyl press too, but I got my original CD from back in the day. I mean, there's probably thousands of them out there. You'd probably sell it for a couple of bucks if you really wanted to. But like, just they put a smile on my face because right next to it was Life of Agony, River Runs Red. And that one I let go on vinyl. I saw it in a bin. I was just starting to collect. And I was like, I don't need to buy everything that I love. It'll get overwhelming quick. And then, you know, here I am, 600-700 records in my office later. And I don't have River Runs Red. So it's nice to actually have it on, you know, at least in some format. And you know, look, it's the original CD I had. Didn't really check the condition yet. Probably didn't take as good care of them as I would have liked to. Didn't think I'd probably be listening to them, you know, when I was in my mid-40s, probably, you know, the mid-40s was pretty old, and I'd be listening to maybe some Tchaikovsky or something. But nope, here I am listening to probably arguably heavier music at times than I used to listen to. So that was a little bit of journey and maybe a little bit of closure to, you know, a period in my life that was really something that I had never thought that I would experience. And then when you're experiencing it, it almost seems surreal. Your heart's broken. Your heart's broken for your child. Your confidence is gone because you just think like, man, I did try and fail. So is it just that you know, it was something that we just couldn't work together, or was it just me? Is it just like, hey, I fucked that up? Because you never really know, you know, you have your suspicions and you have the things about your partner that you feel like, hey, this is where I had a problem. But you also have to look inward, and it's a lot easier a little bit later to realize where you were probably off base and maybe caused some of those problems. So it's one of those things where, you know, had we not been started out so young and been better able to communicate early on, it probably would have, you know, saved us some stress later on. But look, I'm not interested in looking back because I think, honestly, we both ended up happier when when everything was all said and done. And, you know, our son's 17 now, and he's, you know, he's well adjusted. He's doing really well. He's going to finish high school. He's still doing well in hockey. And quite frankly, I think I felt this way since early on. As much as I cared about my ex-wife, I never really felt like she was my soulmate. And I know that probably sounds pretty petty to say, but I had never really thought of a soulmate until I met my current wife, and her and I just clicked in a way that I had never really clicked with anyone, and it was almost instant, like a first date type of thing where you say, well, shit, you know, that was something. But I also want to be cautious that, you know, this is relatively quickly after splitting with my ex-wife. So I want to be cautious that this isn't just, you know, a need that I'm trying to fill. I want to make sure these emotions are genuine. And we took things slow, and those emotions didn't go away. They just got stronger and stronger. So, you know, I think ultimately everything worked out for the best, because I really do feel like I ended up with the person that I'm meant to be with, and meant to spend the rest of my life with. And in all honesty, I hope that my ex-wife feels the exact same about herself. I hope that, in spite of going through what was a tough time and hard for everybody, even if you want it, you know, I hope that she can say that, yeah, it all worked out for the best, and I landed exactly where I think I'm supposed to be. So anyway, I hope you all, you know, have a good week. It's Sunday. It's about 11:15. I feel like I've already lived a full day, but it's the weekend, so I want to be awake and doing stuff as much as possible, because, you know, the weeks I got to give to a corporation. So take care of yourselves. Be nice to people.